You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Avenues Minor League Podcast. I am Steve Saipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos and Thomas Henderson. How are you guys doing?
Doing okay.
I'm doing well.
May or may not have delayed the recording of this podcast by an hour and a half due to my poor time management skills, but, you know, so it goes.
It happens. What can you do?
Who among us?
Exactly. So promote, extend, trade. I got video game crew here. So early in the week, Star Wars Andor came out about the aforementioned Cassian Andor.
Have you watched it yet?
Yes. Have you?
Is it good?
I'm not really feeling it. I don't dislike it, though. I'm giving it a chance. I feel like it's going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm definitely going to give it a chance. I'm not going to prejudge it or anything.
That seems reasonable.
Yeah. Obviously, you know, Obi-Wan came out a couple of months ago. Boba Fett came out like a year ago. We have Andor now. There's the Ahsoka show coming out. The strategy is to make, you know, TV shows now, which is a fine strategy. So what video game adaptations would we want for a Star Wars TV show if you were in charge of the production schedule? First up, we have Knights of the Old Republic. Then we have Fallen Jedi Order. And last is Rogue Squadron.
I could see
Rogue Squadron in the style of, I'm blanking on the name. It was like the pilot game that came out. Recently.
Are you talking about the one with like the Naboo Starfighter?
No, that was Jedi Starfighter, I think it was called, or just Starfighter. Rogue Squadron is from like the
it's like the OG one.
Yeah, from like DOS. not exactly DOS, but the mid 90s, Windows 95.
It's difficult to judge Squadron, and it
was just called Squadrons, and you only play as ship stuff. You only do ship stuff the whole game, and it's fun. It's quite good. And I could see Rogue Squadron doing something like that. where you kind of focus on that side of it?
I'm torn about how I'd feel about KOTOR because, I mean, I love KOTOR, but it's a, one of those OG BioWare games where your decisions impact things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if you make a show, you have to... That said, there is a canon.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a canon. So right?
It's not like Mass Effect where they refuse to make anything canon. I think I'd want to see KOTOR. Like, that seems the most rich to me. There's a lot of good stuff in there.
But do you think that the likelihood of them fucking it up is the highest out of all of those?
You say that, but honestly, the Star Wars show, for as bad as the movies have been, the shows have been between good and excellent, I would argue. Mm-hmm. Like, Boba Fett was a little hit or miss, especially towards the end, but everything Mandalorian has been great. Thomas and I, well, mostly I, go on and on about the animated shows, so...
They're great. They are. That's,
like, maybe I'm hyped beyond measure for Ahsoka, like...
Maybe that's not the right phrase, then, that they would screw it up. Would you say that Knights of the Republic is the one that would be most difficult to translate from the video game to the screen accurately?
I don't think that's true either, honestly.
I think it would be the most scrutinized, though, because of how much, like, KOTOR lives in people's hearts in terms of how popular it is. Like, it's a, people have loved that game for decades.
It transcends Star Wars, basically. Like, it is the... I mean, calling it an OG game probably makes some older video game players very annoyed, but it's like the OG decision-based story RPG.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know if it created, but it definitely resuscitated that computer RPG genre from, like, you know.
It also put it on consoles. Like,
yes,
that was, it came out on the original Xbox. So that
I
was
played like, it on the original Xbox yep, when I was too. Younger, and it was horrifically unstable. It would just crash every 2 minutes, and I still finished it because it was so fucking good. My
Xbox, I have the disc, still. My original Xbox, my KOTOR disc. I have two also. I have both of them.
My other hot take here is that Fallen Order is overrated. Like, it was fine. It was fine.
Yeah, I had no problems with it, but thinking in the context of translating it to a TV show, I feel like that would be the easiest to do because it has a very linear story,
absolutely.
Very established characters. You can only go in one direction.
And you also have an actual actor.
Yeah, like, and that guy is literally like the characters
they've done too. That intentionally in multiple games and now shows where they cast or they model the character design after real life actors so that if they want to translate it to live action, they're set.
That game has a lot of good bones too, but I just hated how honestly I hated that they made me go back through the map.
I know, I haven't
It was so frustrating to me. I get what it was trying to do, and I appreciate it because it was a little different. But also, I didn't want to do that. I realized that pretty quickly that I didn't want the game to play that way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were a lot of things that were good about that game. Like getting Dathomir was pretty cool. Going to oh my god, the planet with the Kyber crystals.
No,
Ilum. Yeah. Like, that was really neat to see in canon. But then a lot of the other stuff was just like, I don't care. And frankly, I found the characters a little boring as well.
It strikes me as a game that the sequel is going to be really good. When they figure out what worked and what didn't, that strikes me as a game. Like, because they are making a sequel. That strikes me as that. Like, Assassin's Creed 1, because I played Assassin's Creed 1, I was like, I see how this is going to be good. But it's not there yet, and then 2 was amazing. And here we are. So I could see them kind of ironing it out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We've gone on a long time about this. I still think KOTOR as a show before the others. Because basically, I trust Filoni implicitly with Star Wars at this point. Like, until he fucks something up, I have so much faith in him to do right by the things Star Wars fans care about, shall we say, because he very clearly is us, right? Like, he feels the same way about Star Wars that all of us do, unlike people like, say, J.J. Abrams, or at the risk of stirring up a shitstorm, like Kathleen Kennedy or the other people at Star Wars. But I trust Favreau and Filoni implicitly, so give me a good KOTOR show would be incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Can't argue.
And then I'll go Rogue Squadron and trade Fallen Order.
So I think what would make Rogue Squadron interesting is that it's definitely at least it's definitely a kind of subject matter that there's really not a lot of, like, there's obviously the books and comics and stuff, but in terms of, like, stuff on the screen, like, it would be, you know, all of these new shows, space battles is not something that is really relevant to any of them.
And that could be a really good TV show, like, mm-hmm. a long-standing thing about one squadron. Like, mm-hmm. you could get really invested in their space battles, and they don't have to be the longest. Like, you could flesh them out more, because you could do multiple episodes about a space. I'm thinking, like, kind of, like, make it, like, a Gundam-esque show, you know?
Hell yeah, that'd be sick.
For the anime fans out there. Because then you could really get invested in the space battles, because you could have them last 2-3 episodes if you need to. And you could do other stuff in other episodes. You could do a lot with that.
I will also say, and I should say this about another thought occurs about Fallen Order. If some people bitch and moan about the Inquisitors in general, I quite like the Inquisitors, but they're in a lot of media already, so I don't know mm-hmm. that we need another show with the Inquisitors as the antagonists. Rogue Squadron would be different from that, obviously, and KOTOR would be very different. Like, that, do something else. Like, there's a lot of really great content about Rebellion and post Rebellion now that's being made. Go to another time period.
Yeah, you could easily do that. There's a lot of space to fill. No pun intended.
A lot of space in space.
Can we just get a show about those two random X-Wing pilots who try to arrest Mando, and then they're like, and then don't want to file paperwork because, you know, that's all of us.
Yeah.
All right, moving on now to how the Mets affiliates did. First up, the Syracuse Mets, and they played the Worcester Red Sox this week. They went 4-3 against them. This is the first series that Syracuse has won in a while. Do you guys have any idea how many weeks it's been since the last time Syracuse won a series? Want to throw out any guesses?
Five.
5 weeks.
Same thing.
This is the first full series that Syracuse has won since they played the Buffalo Bisons the week of July 4th.
Fuck. 1-2. So that's like 10.
Yeah.
Jesus.
You know, they've split a couple, and they've lost a ton. So, yeah, it's been about 2 months. Crazy.
I guess I figured one of the splits was a win, and I didn't realize, you know.
Wishful thinking.
That's bad, though. Jeez.
Yeah.
Who knew that getting a healthy Francisco Alvarez back in the lineup would be a boon to the team?
Yeah.
Curious.
A couple of guys on the roster are having good weeks this week, and hopefully they continue. Syracuse is going to be wrapping up their season with a 3-game series against the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs. Obviously, Syracuse is way out of it. So are the Iron Pigs. So it's a pointless series, and some of these guys hopefully can pad their stats a little more.
Iron Pigs are Phillies, right?
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Most of the Phillies' talent is all double A now. So Iron Pigs will probably be good next year, but they're pretty.
Yeah, they'll be good next year, I think.
And they could run out an Abel Painter McGarry rotation next year like their double A team did at the end of this season. That'd be
they're going to dominate triple A with that.
Except the Phillies might need them in the majors.
Yeah, they might not last very long.
No.
Jose Budo, he pitched on Wednesday. He had the best start of the year. Of his year, I should say. He threw 7 scoreless innings. He gave up 2 hits. He walked 1. And he struck out 11 batters, which is a season high and a career high. It's the second time that he did that. The first time was in June when he was still in double A with Binghamton. So he's ending his season on a high note after.
Good for him.
Yeah, after his spot start a couple of weeks ago did not go well, and then he's kind of been so. in Syracuse since then.
Look, we on this podcast have maligned Jose Buto a lot, justifiably so. But like,
right.
Yeah, if he develops, he's a fine eighth or ninth starter. Like, if you need to spot start Jose Buto once, it's fine, I think.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean,
I don't want to be results based, but they won that game, so it's not because of him, but
it was mostly in spite of him.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, his start was basically forced by circumstance that Walker was hurt, Carrasco was hurt, Peterson wasn't able to pitch, McGill is hurt. You know, like it was just a bunch of.
Right, I mean, that's exactly
what
you want.
The stars aligned.
That's what you want Jose Buto for. So you can call him up. You can throw a couple innings, hopefully better. Usually I would expect better than the ones he did. And you don't have to sign Jared Eichhoff.
Exactly.
Yep. Exactly. And God knows I don't want to see that again.
So. No. No, thank you. Another Syracuse-related question, if that's okay, Steve. I know I'm derailing things here as usual, as is my wont after showing up 90 minutes late.
I think we all love talking about Syracuse, so go ahead.
Is Francisco Alvarez going to pull a Juan Yepez here? And for those of you who do not remember Juan Yepez, he's a pretty decent first base prospect for the Cardinals who made his debut in the playoffs last year. So I think there's a chance the Mets actually Alvarez is sure is killing the ball, and the Mets' right-hand DH options are not.
Yeah, he went this week 7-for-17 with 2 doubles and a homer, which is good, and 4 walks to 5 strikeouts, which is also good. It is the best that he's looked at Syracuse the entire season since he's been there. July 4th. That was his first game with Syracuse, and the last one that he played until he was put on the injured list because of the ankle injury was August 23rd. So you got a good month and a half there. He hit 180, 340, 378. 6 homers, which is okay. 24 walks, good. You know, 40 strikeouts is a little high, but whatever. At least
that's just adjusting to the game a little bit.
Exactly. At least he wasn't a complete black hole because of those things, but since he came back, he is hitting now 368, 442, 658 with 3 homers, 6 walks, and 12 strikeouts. So fewer strikeouts, same amount of walks, the power, the average. You know, 11 games is still a pretty small sample size, but, you know, he's not hurt anymore. We don't know, you know, the extent of the injury and how much it was affecting him.
Or how long he had it, right?
Right. Like, I mean, it could have been bothering him for an entire month. Who knows?
It was like the Brett Beatty thing. He went on IL and then came back and he played his way into a major league promotion before he messed his thumb up. Like, you don't know. And we don't really have access to that as with the minor leagues. They don't talk about that shit unless someone gets hurt and they leak it to Decomo. But otherwise, we'll never know if these guys are hurt. We just have to figure it out, kind of.
I don't know. That was certainly a possibility. And like, look, Alvarez also does still have a bit of a tendency to swing at 55-foot curveballs every once in a while.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Kind of the one thing he does wrong at this point.
If he didn't, he'd be a 20-year-old in the majors.
Correct. Yes.
A month ago.
I have no faith in Mark Vientos. I know he homered yesterday, but
he's had a good series, but yes.
It's also the A's.
Exactly.
And I don't think Darren Ruff is cooked. I don't think he's functionally a different hitter than he was in San Francisco. But you also can't keep waiting for him to come out of the funk.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate situation because you're right. And they traded a lot. I think the best prospect that they traded was in that rough deal with Carson Seymour.
Yep.
I'm trying to think who else they traded. Yeah, I agree with you.
Crazy. Yeah.
Seymour, Swack, Sapucki, and Davis.
JD Davis. Yeah,
since JD Davis is a major leaguer, but you're right. I don't think Ruff is completely cooked. It's just he's really in a bad slump, but also can you go into hopefully the NLDS with a guy in a deep slump as your right-handed DH. Chances are he's not going to play a lot because you'll see more righties and lefties, but still, it's going to be big pinch hitting situations and stuff. And
I mean, that's another question, though, right? Do you trust a, and would Buck use a an untested rookie in those spots? And I don't know how true this is, but the standard baseball wisdom is that you can't, it's not fair to shove young players in those big spots as pinch hitters because they don't perform. I don't know how much I believe that, but
I was talking to Jeffrey Padanastro about this, a friend of the podcast, and he basically made a good point that it would also let Buck pinch hit his catchers more because mm-hmm. he very clearly doesn't want to pinch hit a catcher when there's only one other one on the roster, mm-hmm. which I don't necessarily think I disagree with because you never know. Catchers get hurt. Freak shit happens.
Let Guillorme catch.
I don't think he wants to do that, but yes. Like, that's what happens. So if you have a Alvarez, even if he's buried on the playoff roster and doesn't play a lot, neither is Vientos. So then you have a third catcher who, if in a big spot, you could pinch hit Vogelback or Naquin for Nito or McCann and then use the other one. And then Alvarez is still there in case McCann breaks his finger, you know, mm-hmm. like that allows Buck to do that. And I think that's valuable as well. But I don't know if the Mets are even thinking about that, even though I think they should. And I think they should use this these roster spots for a third catcher for that reason. But Nito's been good this month, so I guess he's guess they're just riding the hot hand.
I'm trying to figure out how this would work roster-wise, right? So they're at 28 right now, and you have to make a spot for Marte already. So Vientos is going to go.
Yeah.
And then probably Drew Smith and Trevor Williams.
I guess. I don't know. That's losing a lot of pitching, but then you yeah. could use your starters in the bullpen.
Right. Okay. And that's without shoving Alvarez on this roster. Then to get yeah. Alvarez on the roster, you either have to go all in on it and ditch Ruff, or next to go would be, you can't get rid of Joely, I don't think.
I don't think they're going to run, because Peterson is going to be the other lefty, right? But
yeah, I would think so.
Are they going to really run Lucchese out there as your loogie?
No, but then you'd also need to make a spot for Lucchese. Like,
yeah, it's tough. There's going to be a lot of questions. I don't envy them trying to figure that out.
The guy to enact, like, I think there's a real chance that I would rather have Francisco Alvarez on the playoff roster than Trevor May, given how he's looked. I don't know. This is not trivial to figure out.
No, it's an important decision. All these decisions are really important because that's the yep. whole ballgame, you know?
Yep. One more important decision, though. Luckily, this one doesn't need to be made imminently. He's the last guy in Syracuse that's worth paying attention to that's also having a good series, Jake Mangum. He was 7-for-25 this week with 2 doubles, a triple, 1 walk to 4 strikeouts. And he is now hitting 307, 365, 445 in 71 games in the season. And more specifically with Syracuse, he is hitting 338, 371, 481. He needs to be put on the 40-man roster in at the end of November, beginning of December, whenever it is. Who knows what the 40-man roster looks like in a couple of months from now, but does he get added? I mean,
I think so.
I hope so.
And they let him fight for the fourth outfield spot.
Yeah.
Or fifth yep. outfield spot, whatever.
Because, I mean, realistically, he profiles as a fourth, you know, a defense first, fourth outfielder. And,
a Jankowski type.
Right, exactly. And that's something that's like, all right, cool, whatever. But he's also Jake Mangum. He has his Jake Mangum powers, you know?
I meant to think about this and look into the 40-man situation more. Oh, and I don't want. I wound up not doing it because I'm lazy, and also the guys over at Baseball America haven't made their excellent primer yet. But I think you can get him onto the 40 man pretty easily. Like,
yeah,
looking at the 40 man now, it's full, and you have to make room for Sean Reed Foley if you want to keep him, and Joey Lucchese and John Curtis. I think you let Sean Reed Foley go. You can let Michael Perez is a free agent. Who cares? Or maybe he's not, but you can let him go. Tyler Naquin is a free agent. Brandon Nimmo's a free agent. Terrence Gores. DFA Dom. Yeah, yeah, probably DFA Dom. Like there are spots to be. You want Yoan Lopez is still on the phone. Michael Givens is a free agent. Tommy Hunter.
Yeah.
There's a lot coming off.
Did they give? Oh, and then DeGrom, of course, will opt out. Walker's a free agent.
Going to come back. Like.
Mm-hmm. Right, okay. But at least for the off-season 40-man, the initial 40-man management, they have a lot of room. Ottavino's only a one-year deal too, right?
Yes.
Lugo's a free agent. May is a free agent. Diaz is a free agent. They have room on the 40, I think.
Wow, I didn't realize there was that many. Yeah, I mean, there's so much guys on the periphery that are going to be going. So
I think they'd have room for Mangum even without all these free agents, but at the start of the offseason they will put Mangum on the 40 and deal with DFAing him later if they have to, but I don't think they'll get to that point because this team has no outfield depth.
Yeah, he probably get claimed too by some bad teams.
Yes, I think
100%.
Look, I think I've never been a Christian Pache fan, but like, if Christian Pache is getting as many at-bats as the A's are giving him, someone will give Jake Mangum some major league at-bats. I think he'd get Rule 5 picked as well. Like, very
early. I think so.
Absolutely.
I could see that. Because then for a team, you think, hey, we could get a free fourth outfielder for nothing.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
And if he's bad, then who cares if you're sending him back to the Mets? Mm-hmm.
He's also valuable to have on your 40-man because you want to have an optionable fifth outfielder, an optionable sixth infielder, an optionable, like three optionable bullpen arms. Like that's good to have around because you can't really sign optionable names most of the time. So you make room for him on the 40.
Because like one of the biggest problems the Mets have had recently is all those guys have to get DFA'd.
Yep.
Because they're not optionable. And sometimes the Mariners claim Travis Jankowski and then you're like, oh, damn, fuck. That kind of sucks. Like, like you don't want him to get claimed, but in a Mangum situation, he doesn't. Like, you could just sneak him through. You could send him down, and call it a day.
This is a total non sequitur, but I did not know that Tyler McGill is 6'7".
Yeah, he's huge. He's a huge dude.
I knew it was tall, but holy shit. I had no idea.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All right, moving on now to Binghamton. Guess what? No Binghamton. Thankfully, the season is done.
Thank you, sweet, merciful God.
Moving on to Brooklyn. Unfortunately, they did not win their playoff series, and their season is done.
They're going to be good next year, though.
Yep.
Yeah, that Brooklyn. I need to get out to a Brooklyn game next year, which I said last offseason too, but actually everyone moved through Brooklyn much faster than I thought they would. So
yeah, I think they're gonna have some staying power there next year.
Mm-hmm.
As we're gonna talk about soon.
Yep, that's because St. Lucie Mets are a good team. They play the Dunedin Blue Jays in a best of three series for the Florida State League Championship, and guess what? They swept it, and they are the 2022 Florida State League champions, the fourth time that they've been the Florida State League champions.
This is one of those moments where I wish I had a soundboard so I could do like the Monty Python, and there was much rejoicing.
No, we definitely
were forced to eat Sir Robin's minstrels. There was much rejoicing. Anyway,
definitely need DJ noise. Thomas got it right. Game one, which was last Sunday night, basically right after we recorded last week's episode. Super exciting game. Back and forth, going to the ninth inning. Unfortunately, St. Lucie found themselves down 5-4. Bottom of the ninth inning now, DeAndre Smith, he lines out to center, one out. Next batter, Kevin Parada, he walks on four pitches. Nothing was even remotely close, so I guess they were just pitching him around him. Next batter is Chase Estep, struck out. So literally down to their last out, Carlos Dominguez did what he does best, and he smoked one over the center field wall, and he gave St. Lucie the lead.
You said that so fast, I couldn't make a snarky remark about striking out.
Well, the first pitch that he took, he swung, and it was a terrible swing. And
yeah, there it is.
There it is. Ramon Gomez, he was brought in the sixth inning, and he was basically perfect up until the ninth inning. He stayed in the game. And in the ninth inning, he got a pair of weak pop-ups and then a routine fly ball to end the game. So St. Lucie up 1-0. Game two on Wednesday, I believe. Tuesday or Wednesday. Either one. St. Lucie was in control for basically the entire time. They scored two runs in the first inning. They scored one run in the second inning. They scored three runs in the fourth inning. So early on, they had a huge 6-0 lead. Blade Tidwell was excellent. We'll talk about him a little bit more in a little bit, but he gave St. Lucie 5 scoreless innings before getting replaced by Javier Atencio. And Atencio, in his time on the mound, he gave up a 3-run homer, so that basically cut the lead in half. And Paul Gervais replaced him. Atencio only managed to record one out, and Gervais righted the ship. He held things down for the rest of the game. Got a little shaky in the ninth inning. He walked a batter, and he allowed a single back-to-back. So the Blue Jays had some guys on base, but then he got a much-needed strikeout, and he induced a double play to end the game. And that was that. And hooray, St. Lucie Mets are champions. So, nice. Yeah, I think at this point, there wasn't really too much doubt, I don't think, in anybody's minds. But I think at this point, it is 100% solidified that Blade Tidwell is undoubtedly the Mets' top pitching prospect.
Yep.
You know, 5 scoreless innings in this game. He gave up 3 hits. He walked 2 and struck out 7. And in the playoffs as a whole, he pitched 9.2 innings. Scoreless, he allowed 5 hits, walked 2 and struck out 13. And you add his playoff resume to what he did in the regular season, and in 19 innings combined, he had a 0.95 ERA, 9 hits allowed, 11 walks, and 24 strikeouts. The control, you know, a little not great. You know, 11 walks in 19 innings is not particularly great. It's a 6.8 walks per 9. But at the same time, you know, he's coming from college where, you know, college umpire in college strike zones, whatever. And then obviously down there in the Florida State League, they have the automatic ball strike system. So there is a level of adjustment. But, you know, the stuff has looked good. He's looked good. And, you know, the only competition that he has for best pitching prospect in the system, Dominic Hamill or Jose Budo, and neither one of those guys have the stuff that Tidwell has, that they haven't had the results. They don't have the pedigree, you know.
They just have possibly healthier shoulders.
Yeah.
But if Tidwell had a healthier shoulder, he would not have been there. Where the
No,
exactly.
It's a good pick. Like,
yeah, it's a very good pick.
This is the kind of dice roll you should be taking in the third round. Like, if you're not cutting it for money, which is also fine if you're using that money smartly. Like, good dice roll. I think your hit rate is so low on a lot of the picks, like the outside of the first or top of the draft, basically. Like, take some risks.
Yeah, taking the safe college bat or whatever. Like, everyone knows that dude's probably not going to be good. Sometimes they are, but chances are they're not. So take the guy who might be hurt, but also might be really talented. And he obviously is good. He's obviously a good prospect. He's their best pitching prospect by a pretty healthy margin, I think. So.
Mm-hmm. And obviously there's some younger guys that maybe one day, you know, you have the Joel Diaz's, your Calvin Ziegler's, but apples and oranges, you know, these are guys that are either coming right out of high school, this, you know, or, you know, or international players that just got recently brought stateside. So apples and oranges, different levels of the career and everything.
It's also worth pointing out that Tidwell is facing competition that's probably worse than what he faced in college at St. Lucie.
Yes and no. I feel like we're still kind of figuring out the great adjustment from, you know, everything getting cut.
Sure.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but I don't think it's as stark as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if Tidwell is in low A in, you know, 2019, when we still had short season A and rookie ball and everything like that, I would say, like, yeah. Now it's like you're getting a giant amalgamation of, you know, international guys that were there the year before and GCL guys and people coming up and college guys and everything like that. One big mushmash of a roster in St. Lucie. Oh, excuse me, at low A in general.
It's, yeah.
But also, that's what he should be doing. So, I hate to be, like, this kind of simple, but also, okay, he's facing competition he's better than. Good that he's dominating them.
Yes.
That's a sign of that's the sign that the stuff is there. Otherwise, we would be concerned.
I mean, the same goes for Kevin Parada, who was also quite good. So.
Oh, yeah. He's too good for St. Lucie, but that's what he should be doing at St. Lucie. Mm-hmm.
That's a good sign. Like, it's almost like, I'm thinking in football terms, like a lot of times I think you look at rookies in the football preseason, you're like, okay, if they suck, that's a little concerning. If they're good, well, okay, it doesn't mean anything.
Right.
So because it's the preseason, doesn't mean anything. This means more than that, but I think the bigger takeaway is that he didn't suck at a point where he shouldn't have, and that's great, and his shoulder is still intact, and let's see what he does next year when they send him to Brooklyn to start the year, I presume?
I would skip him.
I mean, I don't think he has anything left to prove.
No.
Even though it was like, you know, five starts, you know, 19 innings all combined, whatever, but still.
He's a pitcher, man. Like, I don't want to waste his bullets in St. Lucie.
Yeah.
No.
But we were saying the same thing about, you know, all those college pitchers last year, and none of them are on the same level as Tidwell. So, I mean, that is a factor. But at the same time, we did not imagine that all those guys would be starting off in St. Lucie and were in St. Lucie for as long as they were. So who knows what the Mets are doing. But, yeah, he's good.
It's also a little grim that he's the best pitching prospect in the system now.
Yeah, I mean, you had Matt Allen the wild card, and I think we all agree at this point that the outlook is not good right now because of, you know, at least based on what we know, which is nothing, which is in and of itself not good because we should have heard something. So I don't know. Are we ready to pronounce Matt Allen dead here?
It's just
no.
But I mean, people have missed 2 years for Tommy John and been fine. Look at Zach Wheeler. But also, you don't want to miss 2 years of Tommy John. Like, that's not a good recovery, and you don't know what he's going to look like.
I'd rather be his third year missed.
That's true. I'd rather declare him dead after I see him pitch next year.
Yeah.
Like, if he comes back and his stuff is good, then okay, cool. Then, okay, I mean, not cool that you miss all this time, but, like, good that it seems to have recovered anyway. Mm-hmm. Even if it was an arduous recovery, and then you could kind of go on from there. If he looks like Thomas Opucky, then, well, shit. But that's both of those things are on the table.
I'm sad now.
Because Opucky was a legitimate prospect, and his arm went out bad, and here we are.
Yeah.
So I know it's a boring analysis to be like, I don't know, But I can't say either way until we see him.
Pitchers, man.
Yep.
Yep. No, I hope we see him. I hope we see him next year.
Yeah.
If we don't, if he's not on any roster next year.
If we don't see him next year, then I might just be like.
Then it's time to stick the fork in him.
Then he quit.
Because at some point, man, it's got to be. I don't know what's going on at that point.
Schrodinger's pitcher. Does he exist? Does he not exist? We don't know.
Enter my new Microsoft Paint, my AOP this offseason with John Cena cast as Matt Allen.
So, yeah, this is basically, Syracuse is going to be playing that one little three-game series against the Iron Pigs this upcoming week. And after that, you know, baseball is going to be over, so. Well, minor league baseball is going to be over until the AFL. So, yeah, it's been fun.
And overall, and I'm sure we'll do a more full retrospective episode for the system as a whole, but I think you have to be reasonably pleased with the progress the system made this year.
Absolutely.
The draft has been really from the draft on.
Yeah.
Because in the beginning it was kind of dire. But they drafted pretty well in terms of really beefing up their lower levels, even more so. And St. Lucie was good, and Brooklyn was good. So
I mean, Alex Ramirez took a big step forward. Stanley Consuegra got back on the field and looked good. Brett Beatty and Francisco Alvarez kept doing what you wanted them to do. Dominic Hamill made lots of strides. So did Seymour before they traded him. Ronnie Mauricio... Mark Vientos. They
still
exist.
Still trying to figure out Ronnie Mauricio. Still trying to figure it out.
I ain't trying to figure out shit.
Hey, how many other shortstops are there? What did he end up the season with, I think? 24 or 25 homers? It's just
more than there used to be.
Yeah. I don't know, man. If we could take Ronnie Mauricio's eyes out and replace them with, like, who has a really good walk rate?
Juan Soto.
Well, I think he would have actually a net downgrade, though. If you could take Ronnie Mauricio's power and give it to Brett Beatty, because...
Oh, yeah.
Beatty
I think Beatty has more raw power, or at least as much as...
What if you gave it to Jake Mangum?
There you go.
All right.
Because that's the starter.
That dude is... Then I'm saying goodbye to Brandon Nimmo and putting Jake Mangum in center field next year.
Then he becomes Juan Soto.
Jake Mangum with Ronnie Mauricio's power is... Let's see. Fangraphs. Let's go to the Fangraphs leaderboard and find a comp for... Jake Mangum with Ronnie Mauricio's power.
Mike Trout, when he was, like, really good defensively.
It's not that good. It's not. Let's try not to make generational comps. Also, Mangum doesn't walk enough for that, I don't think. He walks a little bit, doesn't strike out a ton, but has power. Andrés Giménez?
That's a good player.
Yeah, Andres does hit for
Betts adjacent.
All right.
I'm not happy with either of those names. It might honestly be no. Brandon Nimmo still walks too much. Kyle Tucker, maybe.
That's a good one. That's
Kyle Tucker's a nice little player. Like he probably walks a little bit more than Mangum too. So Kyle Tucker with fewer walks but better defense.
I would take it. I mean, obviously, we'd all take that. All right, so now we just need to figure out how to merge the two. Lucas, you are the resident scientist. You get on that.
Get on that.
That
get
is. On that. I'll just go back to the start of my PhD and start working in a totally different field, and I'll get back to you in 6 years when I have completely lost my sanity. That is, if I don't lose my sanity in the next 2 months trying to finish this PhD.
While also watching the Mets in the playoffs.
Oh, God. I hadn't even thought about that part.
Mm-hmm. Last time they were in the playoffs, though, sustained run in the playoffs. It did go pretty good. So
last time they were in the playoffs, for real, I threw out my shoulder, throwing a ball off the wall because I was so pissed after the Chase Utley-Ruben Tejada incident.
Mm.
Went to the parking garage down the street and just whipped a tennis ball at the wall for like 2 hours, and I couldn't lift my arm the next day.
Maybe not the best life choice, but
no.
Also completely warranted at the same time. Well, obviously, fuck Chase Utley. And if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complex.queens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at elvlahos343. Ken is at ken1191. And Thomas is at zedmetseason, S-Z-N. Subscribe to the podcast, wherever you get your podcasts from. Rate and review. And, of course, we thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.